before we get into this podcast to say thank you very much indeed to Mark Goodacre, who's one of our listeners and has made a donation towards the running cost of the Dad's Army podcast. Thank you very much indeed, Mark. If you'd like to make a donation to the podcast, then all you need to do is go to dadsarmypodcast.com and click on the donate button.
Who do you think you are kidding, Mr. Hitler? If you think we're on the run.
Hello, one and all, and welcome to episode 46 of the Dad's Army podcast. It's great to have you with us once again. Now, this episode of the podcast, I'm particularly excited about, I have to say, and that's for a very good reason, I think. It's slightly different to usual. It's going to be broken into two segments. The first is going to be just a few minutes long, and it's going to be a competition. But more about that in a second. The second part of the podcast is going to be a commentary again. Now, we've been receiving some great feedback from you on our commentary episode, so we thought we'd notch it up one level and ask a member of the cast to join both me and Oliver when we're recording one of these commentaries. And Frank Williams said yes, and he chose the Royal Train. So the three of us were sitting in a room just watching the episode and started chatting about, well, pretty much anything that came to mind, really, about the episode, Frank's memories. And as always, we went off a little bit of a tangent on occasion. So it's important to remember that these commentary episodes are completely unscripted, they're unplanned, and they're unedited. So they're literally recordings of whatever we happen to come out with at the time. Anyway, back to the first part of the podcast, I mentioned that there was going to be a competition, and this is a rather big competition this time. First of all, the prize is to win a complete set of Dad's Army episodes and DVDs, that's including the Christmas specials, so it's all 80 episodes, so a huge prize there. Now, the competition is open to anyone in the world, doesn't matter whereabouts you're based. However, the discs are Region 2 only. So please make certain that you do have a DVD player capable of playing Region 2 discs. I take absolutely no responsibility whatsoever if your DVD refuses to play these discs. And as you'd expect, a competition that's giving away such a big prize is not going to be that easy. But it should be fun nonetheless. In a moment, you're going to hear a montage of clips from Dad's Army. Now, that's going to be 11 clips from the complete run of Dad's Army. It can be from any episode, any series, any special. There are no special sketch episodes here, so everything will be from either series 1 to 9 or one of the three Christmas specials. All you have to do to be in with a chance of winning the prize is just identify each of the 11 episodes. It's as straightforward as that. In order to enter, you just need to send me an email at james@dadsarmypodcast.com listing each of the 11 episodes, and that includes the last clip, which is after the music finishes. So I hope you enjoy it, and even if you don't enter, I hope you have a bit of fun just trying to identify which of these episodes the clips come from. So do enjoy it. The competition's going to be open for a couple of months, and we'll announce the winner on our third anniversary podcast, and that will be sometime in June or July this year. So you've got plenty of time to get your entries in. Anyway, that's enough preliminary waffle from me. Here comes the clips.
Who do you think you...
One of you is a murderer. Very soon, I shall reveal the identity.
Yeah. Well, can we fall out and have a bit of a smoke while we're waiting in, Sarge?
Yeah, no, I'd rather you didn't, if you don't mind.
Our Corporal Jones?
Yeah.
You see that word?
Yes, sir.
Have you done that?
Do you mean recently, sir?
Mensch, guck mal die Zeit. Typisch britische Untuchtigkeit. Es sind nun schon 10 Minuten her, seit wir abgeschossen worden sind. Und keiner hat uns gefangen genommen.
Kein Wunder, Sie verlieren den Krieg.
Ja, ja, natürlich. Sch, was ist das?
Just a minute, Captain. Yon drum holds 50 rounds. It will go on longer. Something like...
God, Mannering, you can hit pretty low when it suits you.
Sergeant Wilson, take your trousers off.
Tiddly pop.
What is it?
Who do you think?
I dreamt of
fashionable horse
with a little art oil and a feather. And when I awoke, I found it no joke. He was tanning, but
Dreddy with his gun, show who?
To Britain's Home Guard.
To Britain's Home Guard.
It won't work, Walker.
Now, how was that for you? Yes, I'm looking for all 11 clips, including the last clip there just after the music had finished. So get your entries to me as soon as possible, james@dadsarmypodcast.com. Of course, you can always send in your feedback on any other aspect of Dad's Army. We're always keen to hear from you. Feedback has been a little bit dry, I have to say, the last month or so. We've only had a couple of emails, whereas prior to that, you've been extremely busy. We've been absolutely inundated with feedback. So please send us your thoughts on the podcast, send us your thoughts about Dad's Army in general, and we'll go through those in a future show. Anyway, now on to the main part of this podcast, which will be the commentary with Oliver, myself and Frank Williams. So if you're sitting comfortably, sit back and enjoy our ramblings for the next half an hour or so. In a moment, you're going to hear some music, then you'll hear a 3-2-1 play countdown, and on the word play, hit play on your DVD or on your computer, however it is you're going to watch this episode. And we'll be back next month for the May podcast with a preview of Brassingham 2011. Bye for now. Three, two, one, play.
Hello and welcome to podcast number 46. This is a special commentary about the episode The Royal Train. We're very lucky to be joined today. Obviously we have James here, but also a member of the cast. It's none other than Frank Williams himself, the Vicar. The Royal Train was the third episode of the sixth series. It was transmitted on the 29th of June 1973. Quite a popular episode with fans of the series. So here we are. As live, any mistakes, they're all included. So sit back and enjoy The Royal Train with us. Hi, guys. Nice to see you both.
Well, good to see you. Can I tell you something about The Royal Train? The Royal Train was the Queen Mother's favourite episode because her husband, the late King, gets mentioned in it.
Oh, really? Oh,
so
wow.
There we go.
I'd heard that before, and it's certainly a fact that had been reported, but I'd never heard it from a member of the cast before, so now I treat it as gospel.
Well, I hope it's true, anyway.
Were the royal family big fans of Dad's Army, do you know?
I believe the Queen Mother was, particularly, yes. Oh. I'm told that she used to say sometimes to her valet or lady-in-waiting or something, give me a gin and tonic and put a Dad's Army on, after she'd had a sort of exhausting day doing some sort of royal engagement or other.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
I like these opening scenes that have an absence of manner in from the opening. You just have Jones and Wilson here fussing about each other, or fussing over each other in terms of how they look. And, I just find that was quite a bit of a novel, unique take on, you know, the opening of an episode.
Yes, it's a quite fun way, but of course Manrick always comes in and spoils the whole thing.
Well, he kind of is that air of familiarity, and all, you know, I think something that's fairly true of many ensemble programmes is that you create the uniqueness by taking the main characters out and having the other characters interact with each other and have a little scene. And Wilson and Jones don't always get that much dialogue together, I find, in Dad's Army.
Certainly not just the two of them, no. So it is a nice scene. But also what's great about the Dad's Army characters, I think, is that you feel that they have lives. When they're not off the screen, you sort of imagine them all. They're so well-defined, I think is what I'm trying to say, that you sort of imagine them living whilst not on the screen. And indeed, what you can imagine what all the platoon are doing in the church hall right now, you know, messing about, and what the vicar's doing in the church.
I don't think we'd better go into that. I think you sort of imagine Mannering with Elizabeth, his lady wife.
I think that's one of the really good things about Dad's Army is that people get totally immersed into the world of... Of Warmington-on-Sea, and there's not that many
programmes that you can say that, I think. No. Frank, you've often said that The Royal Train is one of your favourite episodes. Apart from being made to work on that railway thing later on in the episode, why is that?
I think it's a very well-plotted episode. I mean, I'm not quite sure where we are at the moment now because I've sort of lost it a bit, but I think we're getting to the stage where they're putting the sleeping pills into an ordinary aspirin bottle, which is very... And so there's a very important plot bit, and I think the way Jimmy and David sort of work these things in, make it absolutely clear that this is important and that sleeping pills are in the aspirin bottle or whatever it is, which is going to be important later on. Location filming at... I can't remember the name of the station now. Can either of you remember that?
Yeah, that was Weymouth Station.
Weymouth
Station. Yeah.
Oh, right.
I believe that's right.
Oh, gosh, John Laurie's singing.
It's quite rare, actually.
Very rare, yes.
Weybourne Station. Yeah. Sorry, Weybourne Station.
Weybourne, I'm just going to say, not Weymouth. Didn't sound right, but I didn't want to argue.
No, this is one of the benefits of recording live. I can get everything wrong with such a very public audience.
Yeah.
Presumably this set was in place of a church hall. Does that not appear in this episode? Would generally have they have... I mean, how many sets could you actually fit in the studio, Frank?
I can't remember now, but I mean, I think this is the church hall, isn't it? We're at the station already.
That's right.
Are we?
Yeah.
We are,
But absolutely, I reckon that they'll have dressed up the same area.
Yes. I can't remember. I suppose this was in the studio. It must have been, but
Where are all of the sets facing the audience? I mean, would they have...
As many as possible. Occasionally you had to have a set behind, simply in terms of room.
Right.
But, I mean, most of them were angled. And if there was one behind, it would be something that had a small scene in it that didn't last too long, hopefully.
Right.
No, I've been to recordings at studios where the set isn't facing the audience.
Right.
And no one explained what was going on. It was really disconcerting because you just had to watch the TV monitor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is not what you go to for an audience show.
One thing I always wanted to ask you, Frank, and it's very true of this episode as well, you've got some studio scenes here and you've got some location scenes here. Now, I think most people are aware that all of the location work was filmed separately. Was it a little bit difficult to follow the story sometimes when you're filming the odd scene, sometimes months apart from
location? I think we got used to it. Arthur, of course, always loved this sort of thing, struggling to get papers out of his pocket and trying to keep his dignity at the same time and eventually achieving it. And then, of course, sending Wilson away to say, no, this is really private, it's really private, even from you. And Wilson's lovely, like, well, I won't look, and all that.
Well, that's purely going into shutting poor Jimmy Beck out. Yeah, going into developing the complete pomposity of Manor.
Yes.
And would something like that, you reckon, have been written? Were all these sort of movements carefully written into the script? Like, you've got the cubby hole here. Would that have been written, or could it have been something developed in rehearsal?
I think that probably would have developed in rehearsal. And obviously, how much struggling Arthur would do to get the papers out of his pocket would be developed during rehearsal. And, of course, I love the bits where Corporal Jones always sort of says things like, stand by, he's about to divest himself of his secret orders, getting words slightly wrong. And all this gather round...
How much of Clive Dunn's words were ad-libbed, or were they...?
No, I think they were all rehearsed. I think they were. I think they were all rehearsed, all carefully written.
Who was most meticulous to the script? Who really didn't ever stray off their lines?
Me.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know the particular. I think most of us kept to our lines. I think Arthur was a bit sort of vague sometimes online, but won't surprise anybody else who was vague online as regards from Arthur's point of view.
It's interesting when you read the published scripts, because they publish those as one huge book now, and
yes,
it's a really thick book as well.
Fantastic, isn't it?
And you try and follow some of the episodes along. Very rarely do the main platoon stick to it word for word.
Oh, really?
With one or two exceptions. And I have to say, Frank, you're one. You very rarely deviate from the line that's actually published in the scripts. But practically all the platoon, particularly Arthur Lowe, so long as they say something that's remotely resembles...
Vaguely like,
then it seems to be allowed in. Oh, well, here on screen we've got Mr. Pertwee. Barging in, and he's the first in a series of people who come barging in.
This is the thing. I mean, one after the other, he thinks it's all deadly secret, and everybody else actually knows about this. Yes.
And they all claim some kind of reason as to why they need to know that the king is on his way.
Yes.
So.
And Pertwee, of course, as he says, pushing people around a lot and shouting. That's what he does,
I think that denigrates his acting talent significantly.
It does indeed, but he always says it himself.
I know, it's completely untrue.
Totally untrue, yes. No, he's a very good actor, is Arbel.
Now, this is the station master here.
And now that is played by William Moore.
Yep.
Have I got that right?
You have, yeah.
Who is married to Molly Sugden.
Right.
So Molly Sugden's husband played the station master.
I didn't know
but,
that.
But an actor very much in his own right. I mean, you know, who've done a lot of work.
He went on to play Mr. Lumsden in the comedy series Sorry. Ronnie Corbett. I think he was in every episode.
Oh, really? I didn't know about that.
An awful lot of work.
He must have played Timothy's father, then.
Presumably so,
Timothy Lumsden. Ronnie Corbett's character's father.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
Now, this is the almost obligatory parade ground scene here, but obviously it's got a slight twist on it, in as much as they're trying to do the slow present and the quick present.
Oh, yeah.
Where are all the guns, like the Tommy gun that Ian Lavender's carrying and all the platoon's weapons, were they specially made for the series, or do you think they were existing props?
I would think the rifles were certainly existing, but probably the Tommy gun too, probably out of some vast prop store somewhere, you know.
I like the way that they make the difference there between Pike and the remainder of the platoon.
Yeah.
If they're going to isolate one character and try and get a laugh out of it, it's usually always Jones or Pike.
Yeah.
And Pike with a Tommy gun, I think he's... he's a number of scenes throughout the entire series of Dad's Army with Pike and a Tommy gun.
Yeah.
And I think they're great.
And Pike gets quite stroppy at times with Mannering. Mannering always has the final thing to say, if you do that again, Pike, I shall send you home.
Yes. Although that was something that developed over time. I think the first two series, you really do get the impression that Pike is a very young character.
Yes.
Whereas he gets more and more cheeky
and
more and more loud, I think, as the series goes on.
Yeah.
I think they probably realise they can get a lot of comedy out of Ian that way. And,
Well, I mean, I think Jimmy and David throughout the thing did actually come to this sort of conclusion that if you started writing for the actors' idiosyncrasies, then that would that would add something to them.
Did they pick up on any of yours? How did the vicar change?
I don't think I don't know.
Well, speaking of which,
here I am, accompanied by the verger and the mayor, Fred McNaughton.
Yes,
am I right?
Yeah.
Who came from quite a big theatrical family, I believe, and did an enormous amount of really very interesting work.
This time, he was in the Steptoe and Son film, and played a registrar in Crossroads.
Oh, did
around
he?
This time. I think he did five episodes of Dad's Army in total.
Yeah, yes.
He was also a reader on Jack and Ori
around this time. Yeah. He was also very tall, pretty tall anyway. I'm tall, so if he gets next to me, you'll be able to see how tall he is.
He's not...
He doesn't appear to be very yet, so... I mean... This is marvellous stuff.
This wonderful sort of melee between who is going to stand where.
This is always the danger when you sit here and watch these things and you commentate. You end up laughing, which can't be particularly interesting. Yeah. I would have thought to listen to. Yeah.
What's the correct term of the vicar has like a red sash. Is that the correct terminology for what you're wearing?
No, I think what he's wearing is an academic hood.
Right.
But don't ask me which college it was, whether it's an MA or... I don't know what it is, but it's a university degree thing. Obviously, I was quite erudite in some sort of way.
Now, this scene is on the platform at Weybourne Station.
Yeah.
And, of course, the whole joke of this scene is that the king, you know, is turning up in a very shabby, dilapidated, run-down train.
Yeah.
But apparently this was quite a common thing in real life, as you would expect during wartime, And, you know, people of a certain standing often travelled inconspicuously.
Yes.
So.
Yes.
This looks like a lovely summer's day, Frank. Was everyone hot in their costumes?
I bet we were. The thing about David and Jimmy was, David particularly, was that he always seemed to manage to choose wonderful weather. People actually used to say, if you're going on holiday, do it when Dad's Army's doing location filming in this country, because that's when the good weather is.
And here we have the first scene with Henry. Who's the driver who ignores everybody? And he's played by Freddie Earle.
Oh, Freddie Earle, and the other one is Ronnie Brody.
That's right,
absolutely.
Yeah. Plays
that's
Bob.
Right, yeah. And I see back to the. We're going to get back to the plot again in a minute because it's got to be sort of sorted that they take the tablets.
Mm.
The thing is, we did this on the. Now, I can't remember, but is Weybourne Station on the Sheringham line? It is, isn't it?
It's the north... Oh, it's. I'm not sure if it's on that particular line, but the...
Because we did all the filming on the rail track, is the railway from Sheringham to wherever it
Holt.
Is.
Well, Holt.
Holt.
Holt. It's a North Norfolk Railway.
Okay, and the Weybourne's not on
Weybourne's not on that. The station itself is so... They must have gone to a couple of locations.
Oh, right, yeah.
When we start seeing scenes with the train, you know, just on the railway lines, that line is actually the North Norfolk Railway, which I have been to.
All right.
I didn't know it had any connection with Dad's Army at the time, but when I was young, my parents seemed to think the only place in Britain you could possibly go was North Norfolk. Without fail, we used to go on that railway line, and I had absolutely no idea.
And that is the Sheringham to Holt.
It's Sheringham Holt, and I think Cromer is a stop as well. I think there's only, is that right? There's only
I don't think Cromer. Well, you may be right about Cromer, but I don't think you.
Ah.
I love this bit where Arthur goes down trying to find the king. Excuse me, are you there, Your Majesty?
He does it so brilliantly.
Yeah,
does it so brilliantly. Yes. I shall have to go and check that North Norfolk line now. Cromer was the only station that was from my memory. The rest of it I had written down in front of me.
Well, I'm not saying you're wrong, but I think you are, because Sheringham something and something. And it was, when we were doing this, it was sort of run outraged passions. You're wondering what on earth Mary is on about.
Yes.
When we were doing this, it was run by sort of enthusiastic amateurs, and the engine driver was a solicitor, I think. I may be wrong about that, but
you mean it wasn't Ian Lavender?
Ah, no. What I meant was when we were going to and from the location. I mean, you know, the train had to get there, and he did say to Teddy Sinclair, myself, would you like to go back on the footplate, as it were. So we stood there watching the shoveling the a solicitor shoveling the coal into the thing to get the train going.
Yeah. Did he charge for it?
No, he didn't. And he may not have been a solicitor. He may even have been a bank manager. I don't know.
Oh, even more dodgy. Yeah.
Was Freddie Earle's moustache real? Do you think? The only reason I ask is that Ronnie Brodie was also in Dad's Army twice, with a moustache and glasses, much like what Freddie Earle is wearing, and here he hasn't got the moustache.
Oh, right,
I wonder whether they shared moustaches.
They might be, I don't know.
But Ronnie Brodie was in Number Engaged, which we also did a commentary on.
Right.
And he was also in Has Anybody Seen My Money?
Where did you last see your money?
Yeah, where did you last see your money, yeah.
Well, Fred McNaughton was in several episodes, wasn't he?
That's also right.
As the mayor. I mean, quite often we had dear Eric Longworth as the town clerk, but there were occasions when we had the mayor instead.
Mm.
Well, Ronnie Brodie also appeared in Heidi High, and Freddie Earle also appeared in It Ain't Half Hot Mum. So presumably Jimmy and David had their little repertory company of people
they
liked.
Oh, they did indeed, yes. I mean, I was very privileged to be in the repertory company because I did a Heidi High. I mean, I married Ruth Maddock to whoever she married in the end in Heidi High, with Colin Bean as my verger because sadly Teddy had died by then. And then and then of course I got promoted to being a bishop in you rang me, Lord,
But Jimmy, that was wonderful. So now you're going to be in Hot Pursuit very shortly.
Well, but Bill in charge, shouting and so.
Now, I like this particular scene. You've got five people on screen, none of whom are part of the platoon, or six, sorry, because I missed the female actress there as well. But I like this particular episode for that reason. There are a number of scenes that don't feature any of the regular platoon, and don't even feature the vicar, the verger, or the warden. It's purely guest cast.
Yeah, that's nice. It keeps
it's
it
rare,
fresh, doesn't it?
It is rare. Yeah. And I think that shows they needed to drive the story forward. Yeah. So rather than try and have gags, they have a relatively serious conversation.
Yeah.
And that happens in between Henry and Bob when he's on the phone trying to get a new brake wheel, which obviously is a very, very important plot point.
Yeah. Yes.
Would this have been done in front of the audience?
I can't remember. I think this is probably done on location. I honestly do not know this.
I'd say it was probably done in studio.
Blue screen behind them. Yes, yes.
But the it looks rather good, blue screen, in fairness. Yes. There's no dodgy lines around it. Oh, then maybe it isn't blue. I think RF on top of a train is blue screen.
Yeah, but, I think it's CSO. And I think this here is on the railway line we were talking about a little while ago.
Oh, it is indeed, yes. I can tell you that it is.
And you're getting quite animated there along with...
I do animation on the
page. You mentioned earlier, Frank, that you weren't too sure whether or not Jimmy and David wrote the characteristics you have into the vicar's lines.
Yeah. I'm going to tell myself.
No, one of the things that I've noticed, and you might completely say that I'm wrong here, is that I think the vicar got grumpier and grumpier throughout the series.
Oh, really? Well, yes. I was enjoying myself more and more. So, yeah. But, of course, this was really quite hard work, all this pumping this thing, you know.
What is it actually called? Do you know?
It's a dolly, I think.
Is that what it's called? I haven't got a clue.
Same thing as Private Godfrey's sister, a dolly.
Although you wouldn't take her for a ride in Waveborn, would you?
And I love the way they use what I call the Dick Martin music always.
Oh, yes, action excitement.
Yeah.
Now, you two are far too young to remember, but Dick Martin during the war was, of course, one of the great things we all used to listen to on what we call the wireless radio now. And it was very exciting, and this was a signature tune. It had always sort of used a lot for sort of... background music to chases and things like that.
Mm.
Pumping for Britain, here we are, aren't we? Yeah.
How far did you actually have to pump? I mean...
Well, I don't know. I mean, it seemed a long time. Now, this is wonderful stuff because, you see, Clark, being much younger than the character he can play, can do this sort of acrobatic thing of sort of slipping and falling and you've saved my life, Captain Barry, and all that carry on. Yeah.
This is a very similar kind of scene to that in Uninvited Guests with Clive Dunn on top
on the roof.
You Saved My Life.
Yeah, yeah, again.
Yeah.
Well, that was almost the sort of You Saved My Life, Captain Mandarin, how can I be, you know, all that was wonderful.
Mannering must have been thinking, darn, I did it again.
James isn't a huge fan of Jones. Yeah. I mean, what are your takes on Jonesy, Frank? I mean, do you think the character...
Oh, I think it's the most wonderful character. Like, what I really love about him is when he goes into those interminable stories with Arthur sort of showing exhaustion and, oh, God, is he ever going to finish, you know? And there's always a sort of wonderful sort of ending to it that doesn't really make any sense at all.
Those are the things I like about Jones, sort of dialogue based. It's a slapstick physical comedy that I just don't find funny.
I don't quite know what's happening. Oh, is it caught in his pocket?
I can never quite figure out whether he just continually lets it hit his backside.
Yeah, I think that's what's happening.
I think why?
Probably
why
does Then again, he's quite close to the edge. I mean,
maybe that's it.
Were there any sort of hairy moments doing that scene?
I mean, well, there were later on. Have we got to the bit? No, we haven't yet. I mean, we're still chasing the train, aren't we?
You're not going backwards yet.
No, we're not, but... that's when the hairy stuff started, when we were being pursued by the train. This was, as you say, probably done in the... Well, was done in the studio, I'm sure. And I think this probably was done in the studio. Well, it was done in the studio against the blue screen, I'm sure, but whether or not it was done in front of the audience or not, I don't know. I think it probably was. I mean,
so there were times, were there, when you recorded in a studio without an audience?
Well, I don't think we did. Oh, look, we've stopped now, and we're sort of contemplating what's happening.
Uh-oh.
it's reversed and it's coming after us.
I wonder if there was any debate about who else would appear on the dolly. With you, because obviously you've got the unholy trinity there.
Yeah, the unholy trinity plus the mayor.
Yeah.
Well, no, I don't think there was. I mean, the mayor's got a nice costume, you see, so it looks good. But now this is where it did get hairy, because we were aware that the train was chasing us, and because Ian was ostensibly driving the train, the real driver had to sort of stay out of sight. So Bill Burkby suddenly said, "It's chasing us, and it can't see us." And you can see there, it looks really very close. And we got really... And I remember Bill saying at one point, "If it gets any closer, we'll all have to jump." And I said, "But we'll all break our necks." He said, "If it crashes into us, we'll all break our necks." So, but we were pumping for Britain there. But obviously, there was a walkie-talkie thing, and they were saying to the driver, "No, you're getting too close, or slow down a bit, or stop a bit." And but all was well, and I'm here today,
as we can see.
As is dear Bill.
But there must have been an awful lot of planning in this episode. When you think about, you know, two different trains, two different locations, lots of intercutting, you know, it must have been a rather complex episode all around.
But it was great fun to do. I mean, all this location filming was enormous fun, as far as I'm concerned. And I think that's why it's probably one of my favourite episodes, because it is such fun. And this wonderful sort of line-up now at the end, and everybody waiting for the real royal train to come by. I think that's what's happening now, isn't it?
Yes,
indeed.
How would you have rehearsed? Did you used to rehearse location stuff? I mean, how do you go about rehearsing everything we've just seen?
Well, I mean, you get off the trolley and we do this bit, and then you do the bit again, and then they say, "Okay, we'll shoot it now." Yes. Oh, can you take this? And here comes the train.
Now, this is a piece of stock footage.
Is it? Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. Oh, wow. Oh, no.
And
now, you see, I don't know why I say this is my favourite, but we all got soaked at the end by means of the crew throwing buckets of water over us, as I remember. But it is a fun episode, isn't it?
No, it is. It's a shame. Did each of you have an individual member of the crew chucking water over you?
I can't remember, but I have a feeling we did. I think the crew probably enjoyed it rather,
I can imagine. It's just a shame you don't see a close-up of everybody.
No. Well, I mean, there wasn't a close-up of Arthur. Would Arthur have said, "I'm not having a load of water thrown in my face. You know,
I think he probably did. I mean, I think we all did. I don't know. I can't swear to it. But I think he probably did.
It's one of the very rare times that the whole cast get covered in water.
Yes.
Rather than just...
I usually manage to avoid it, I have to say.
Yes. Yes, indeed. Well, yeah. I suppose it's just not right to soak the vicar that often. Well, can I say thank you very much indeed, Frank, for joining us for the commentary.
It's been an enormous pleasure. And great fun to relive the moments of the Royal Train and all that rush coming down the railway line. I was younger then, of course.
Well, it's been real fun listening to your memories. And Oliver, as always, thank you very much indeed.
It's been an enormous pleasure. Thank you, everyone, for listening.
We'll catch up with you again very soon. Bye for now.
Bye.
Bye.